edition of the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I am your host, Dougie Almeida. Hi, welcome. I am your host, Dougie Almeida, and welcome to the Wake Up Late with Dougie Show. I'm joined today with my lovely and very talented co-host, Jen Hellman.
Hi, everybody.
And special guest, Harry Basil.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Thank you so much for being on the show.
Oh, it's great to be here, Dougie Almeida. I was calling you Almeida. I didn't know it was Almeida.
It's Almeida.
Almeida, that's even better.
Yeah, my grandparents didn't want the third syllable. I don't know if that's even correct. Jen, welcome back, by the way. We haven't seen you in a while as well.
I know. It's been busy, but I'm glad to see you and be here.
Thank you. Everybody sounds so excited. It's like we're about to start a reverse mortgage seminar. Everybody ready? You can't lose your house. But I'm having a weird moment. I just came out and went out back to see what's going on. My wife was doing yoga in the lawn chair outside in underwear and a tank top.
Ooh.
And I'm like, wow, I'm about to go do a show. I don't know if I need to have this on my mind. Harry, you're a married man. Is that a warning sign?
I've never seen my wife doing yoga in the backyard in a underwear and a tank top. But one time I came home in our first house and she was standing in front of, we had one of those wall air conditioners, and I guess she had lotion on her thighs. So she was naked standing on a chair in front of the air conditioner to dry off the lotion that was on her. And that was kind of a surprise. You know, that was like,
I think that's
30 years ago.
Yeah.
Now we have central air, so it would be, she'd have to get on a ladder to do it, you know?
Yeah, that would be awkward.
That was more of like walking in the middle. I think that was, you walked in the middle of something she was doing. This
yes.
situation with Dougie, I don't know.
Yeah, like, she was home alone and just, you know.
Yeah,
that cool. was, but this sounds.
It was in the
this,
summer, it was cool. Okay. It was like biting into a York peppermint patty or something like that. You know?
Did I mention there was a cameraman and two gaffers?
That your neighbor was there?
Yeah.
No, this sounds premeditated. I'm going to say this sounds premeditated.
Yeah, I do. I will say this, though. I was awkward because all of a sudden I thought like FBI and I started looking the vantage point of the neighbors. We have a big hedge, thank God, for part of the house. But the neighbor does have some view between the jasmine tree. And I did see the shade with a little bit of a crick open in it. So, you know, just thought that was odd. Welcome to the show. I didn't mean to open with that, but sometimes things just hit you, right? I mean, you're a performer, right? So sometimes you ever go on stage and something happens that you just got to deal with. Otherwise, you can't go on it. You really, really shouldn't even start the show.
Yeah. And you're thinking about, like, all of a sudden you have this out of body experience and you're going through the motions of doing a bit, but you're thinking about something weird you just saw. Yeah. Is that what you mean?
Yeah, I think so. Jen, have you been outside doing yoga with the neighbors?
Go ahead.
I do it inside. I'm inside. I tend to do those things inside versus, it's hot out. It's Florida. It's very hot.
You're in Florida too, Jen?
I am. I'm based out of North Palm Beach.
Oh, okay.
By the way, I was reading this earlier. You were introduced by my comedy god, Mr. Roddy Dangerfield, who you got to be good friends with and close with, which, you know, I can't even, this is a guy who used to put a smile on my father's face, and I would see it as a young child who was so happy for my father, who had to endure hours of being yelled at by my mother to finally get to watch Rodney Dangerfield. But he introduced, that was great. He introduced you as the kid your mother never let you play with.
Oh, yeah. Rodney was the best. I got to open for him for about 17 years. I was like his opening act, and even got to play Florida with him a couple of times at the Sunrise Theater down in Fort Lauderdale, which was a lot of fun. And, got to be in a couple of his specials, and he was the best, man. He loved young comedians, loved working with young comedians and stuff like that. You know, just, he launched a lot of careers on those HBO specials.
That was one of the things, you know, we watched Rodney Dangerfield and right, the HBO shows, and you got to see Dice, you got to see Kinison, you got to see.
Yeah, I mean, basically nobody would have ever given Dice or Kinison a shot on television, and, putting them in those HBO specials and letting them do their acts, the way they are meant to be seen in a comedy club, really helped launch their careers. I think both of them were like selling out clubs right after the Dangerfield special. Then they both each got their own specials, and then they were doing concerts.
And that was the thing you love, because, you know, he had, and it was, to me, it was great, because here's a guy, especially I could reflect to now, here's a guy who really got it, really got the success late. You know, most people would have hung up the hat and said, I'm done, you know, and I think I'm going to be a karaoke singer, or I'm going to be a welder, you know.
I don't think there was karaoke around then, but go ahead.
Yeah, you know, well, I'm trying to make a time.
I think it was serendipitous. I mean, this is my growing up. This is my biggest influences in comedy. This is the 80s, and HBO was this thing. This was like, because before you had to be TV clean to be on the Tonight Show. I mean, the chances to rise, the opportunities to rise and get mass exposure on a mass medium didn't really exist, and HBO brought that there. So I mean, just Rodney Dangerfield would be crazy not to take advantage of that.
And then, yeah, I remember Rodney telling me stories about offering, because basically what happened was this: they had the Young Comedian special, and it had been around for about 8 years, and Rodney did the 9th annual Young Comedian special, and he handpicked all the comics that were on it. I think he might have been the first host that did that, you know, that they allowed to handpick the comics. And it was the highest rated HBO Young Comedian special. So HBO offered him his own special every year after that. And it was the same format where he would host. He did it from Dangerfields, most of them from Dangerfields in Manhattan. And he handpicked the comics. And every new special that he did, somebody was a breakout star. On the one that I did, Kennison and Bob Nelson really broke out. But also on that special was Bob Saget, Yakov Smirnoff, Louis Anderson, Rita Rudner, Maurice LaMarche. And then the second one, I think, had Seinfeld, Kennison again, Bob Nelson again, Jeff Altman, Robert Townsend, and then I think Roseanne got launched on that one too. It was pretty amazing.
Which, by the way,
Bob Nelson does the football, right?
Bob was a big draw on the East Coast, you know, in New York, New Jersey, up and down the East Coast. You know, he didn't really like to go on the road too much. And like Bob Nelson has a huge fan base up in Maine and the north of the East Coast. Same thing with Bob Nelson. But the cool thing about those specials, when you did one of those specials, you know, this is pre-Netflix and streaming. Everybody saw you. So, you know, it's probably the only thing I ever got recognized from all the things that I've done in my career was that first HBO special.
Yeah. And, you know, you would think there's really not, for that aspect, as Jen even mentioned, to that uniqueness, like you said, you know, these are acts that most places wouldn't put on, you know, most TV shows wouldn't put, like Kennison and guys like that on TV.
Right.
You know, it was the edgier. It was the outside, the, you know.
Yeah. And when those guys hit, Rodney was never really a blue act, you know. I mean, he wasn't that dirty. He had a couple of, you know, four-letter words in his act, but he was a comic who, you know, came from Sullivan, the Ed Sullivan Show and the Tonight Show. He wrote for television and knew it was all about getting television exposure, national television exposure, to sell more tickets and become more famous. But when he saw how big Dice and Sam became, he started to get a little bluer in his live act. And more dirty stuff would creep into the act.
That's funny, because usually it's the other way around, right? Like you say the first words you learn in the language are dirty words. A lot of times as a comic, you obviously learn to dirty your jokes first. So that's a benefit. I mean, you watch some of these old shows when he's on the Carson, these... You know, I love when I watch some of these Carson bits and they're all smoking out there.
Yeah. You know what was great too is some of the old Tonight shows, he would have like four comedians on. you know, and like you, they never do that today, but it would be like, there's a classic one, I think, with Bob Hope, Dean Martin, George Gobel, I think another comic that's out there. And, you know, so each one would stay on and the next guy would come out and they'd all kind of bust each other balls and stuff like that. It was fun to watch.
I have to say, you know, one of the things, and I loved, there's so many funny Rodney Dangerfield movies, you know, Back to School, you know, obviously Caddyshack. I think a lot of people found it, you know, a lot of the world, a lot of this country and the world saw him in Caddyshack. You know, that right. was some people's his first real experience.
Yeah, you know, he used to complain about that. He'd go, man, you know, I lost a lot of fucking money, man, doing that movie. You know, I had to turn down Caesar's Palace and this and that, and I got paid nothing, man. And I'm like, yeah, but you became a superstar and a household name after that.
So
it's just so funny that he's still bitter about a couple of gigs that he had to cancel to do the movie.
That is interesting because, right, you would act, sometimes, you know, bad things happen. You realize, holy shit, this actually worked out for a purpose.
Yeah, totally.
What a great movie. Like, that is, I think, classically, that is one of my top five comedy movies of all time, Caddyshack.
Yeah, and it really holds up. You know, there's always a new generation of people that discover it, a new generation of golfers. I mean, it's like the premier golf comedy. And Rodney and Chevy and Bill Murray, you know, was supposed to be the younger, the caddies movie, but the old school guys are the ones that stole the movie with all the catchphrases and everything like that. And Rodney added all of his own material.
Really? That was interesting. With a guy like that, do you give him a script? You know what I mean? With a guy like Rodney.
Well, you know, if you watch the making of, he was very green to making movies. So, you know, Harold Ramis said action, and Rodney was just, you want me to do the bit? You know what I mean? Like, get used to that. And then there's some stories about how he thought he was dying because no one was laughing. And in movies, when you make a film and you do a funny scene, when the director says cut, then the entire crew just breaks up laughing. It's just amazing that they're holding it in. But Rodney thought he was dying because no one was laughing. And they explained to him, Rodney, it would ruin the sound if everybody laughed, you know. But he caught on pretty quickly. And by the time he did Easy Money, he was a pro, you know. He was a thespian.
That's awesome. Because you think about it, that is the difference from every comic I ever interviewed that is an actor as well, that did both or had experience with both. That was always a thing, like the love between the two, you know.
Yeah. I was just watching a documentary on the making of Galaxy Quest, which is a great movie. I love that film. And, I guess Alan Rickman, God bless him, you know, rest his soul, what a great actor. He didn't really like Tim Allen that much. They talked about it in the documentary. And Tim was just cracking jokes and keeping the crew happy and the other actors happy. And Alan Rickman would just roll his eyes. But it all worked for the character because they were supposed to like butt heads in the script. But comics are like that, you know, on the set. You know, they'll you know, just keep the mood light, which is nice because there's a lot of downtime.
I thought while we're on that subject, sometimes, you know, being you'll laugh at this when I say in the South Florida comedy scene, I'm considered a bit of a veteran. Remember, this is Florida. look at his eyes. He's like, what?
Well, no, I'm just trying to focus because I don't have my glasses on and everything.
Me too. Yeah. I'm like, y'all. Sorry.
But, you know, so anyway, so they always ask questions. So, actually, I had a comedian. I think he's very funny. Young kid starting out asked me, "Do I think he should take acting classes to strengthen his comedy?" Well, how would you answer that?
Well, you know, it's weird. Today's different. The advice I used to give comics years ago, it was to stay in town and be available for pilot season and going on auditions. But that's a completely different time. I mean, that was the '80s, and in the '80s. You know, in '90s, there would be a lot of showcases at the clubs, you know, at the Improv and the Laugh Factory and the Comedy Store. On any given night, you know, you could be on the lineup. Like, I got this NBC deal in the '80s because Brandon Tartikoff, the head of NBC, was there to see Louis Anderson. And I was on after Louis. Mm-hmm. And the next thing I know, I'm getting called outside. I'm in my Rocky trunks, and I'm meeting the head of NBC, Brandon Tarkle. I didn't know who he was. And he said, I want to do something with you. You know, he loved my act. And they signed me to a development deal. He wanted me for SNL. They flew me to New York. I showcased for Lorne Michaels and Franken and Davis. I didn't get SNL, but then I wound up doing two pilots, a spinoff of Give Me a Break, which I just got a check for $11.
Wow.
Residual check. And then a spinoff of Family Ties, you know, but neither of the pilots got picked up. But, you know, I had my shot, you know, and back in the 80s and 90s, every other comic had a development deal.
I have to ask you, because as you're telling me the story, I put myself in that position with you, that being, you know, auditioning for SNL. So I imagine you were nervous. And the question is, how did you deal with that?
Well, I fucked it up. What I did wrong was this. I wish I had a manager. I only had an agent at the time. I was with APA. And I went, and in my showcase at the comic strip or the Catch, I just did like a strong set using the music parodies that I do. And that didn't show SNL anything, any of my talent. I do a ton of impressions. And that's what Tartikoff saw. He saw me do a half hour set. So he saw me do bits and stuff. And that's what made him think that I was right for SNL. And stupid me, I just went and thought, oh, I got to kill doing a stand-up set. And Lorne Michaels, you know, said, all I saw him do was jump around to music and everything. He didn't show me anything that would warrant me coming in to do a audition, you know, like you see a lot of those taped auditions where, you know, like Dana Carvey may go through like 10 impressions and some original characters and stuff like that. So I wish I had the guidance of somebody to tell me that, like, don't worry about killing, just show them that you can do characters and voices and stuff like that.
Wow. So you're auditioning for Broadway. You know,
I don't know what I was doing.
But that's the scary thing. It's like, you know,
it's dumb.
Yeah, but and I think about it all the time, because I look out to like my mentors in comedy, people I've worked with, people that are, you know, in the business. Now I reach out to them for certain things. So I, you know, to try to make the best decisions I can, because those kind of things make me always nervous, you know. Like, I was at the Las Vegas, I was at your club in Las Vegas, and I was nervous. I felt like a school kid. I was like a dopey bastard. I'm a grown man. I'm a licensed fiduciary, goddammit. I deal with millions of bucks, and here I am shaking in my knees like I'm about to do a high school play.
Well, it's always going somewhere new or playing a new venue is always nerve-wracking, because you want to do well. You want to do well. You want the audience to like you. You want the other comics to like you. You want the booker or the staff to like you. All of that stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely something to consider. Now, I mentioned Rodney Dangerfield again. All the funny movies, but you wrote or co-wrote with him Meet Wally Sparks.
I co-wrote Ladybugs, the soccer comedy. Meet Wally Sparks. All the ones that went to video. No, those two came out in theaters. Those actually had big theatrical releases. Ladybugs came out in 92. Meet Wally Sparks came out in 95. And we got released the same day they re-released Star Wars in movie theaters. Star Wars was number one at like 20 million. Jerry Maguire was like 8 million. We came out, we were number 11, right behind Beautician and the Beast, starring Fran Drescher. I think we made 2 million opening weekends. So it only stayed in theaters for like maybe 3 weeks, which was a bummer. But then it did very well on video. So that was when, that was like you couldn't buy a video for $20. Videos cost like $150 back then in 95. You know, yeah. They sold a lot of units. Anyway.
You ever see that movie, Jen, actually, Meet Wally Sparks?
I haven't. I did, but oddly, I saw Ladybugs, but I didn't see the Wally Sparks. But I'm sure I walked in Blockbuster and thought about grabbing it.
I think it's on Amazon or something like that, you know?
Yeah, I'm a soccer player. So, you know, big time, my family played soccer. I went to college playing soccer. My dad played soccer. So I obviously watched that movie, and I thought it was great. I got a lot of balls. All I know is I got a lot of balls.
The kid who was the star, Jonathan Brandis, he's not with us anymore. He was just such a wonderful young actor. But it was between him and Leonardo DiCaprio for the lead kid. And I remember Ronnie and I had two headshots up on the wall because we were trying to decide which one would be good with him. And Leonardo was great. But when he did, like when he was supposed to be dressed up as a girl, he did like this little girl's voice. And it was just a little too shticky. And what we loved about Jonathan Brandis is he had a naturally a deep voice for a 14-year-old. And it was funny hearing that deep voice come out of him with the wig on. Yeah. So we were like, oh, this kid's great. You know, and then, you know, worked out great for Leonardo because I think he wound up getting a boy's life with De Niro. Like, and maybe he wouldn't have been able to do both movies, and he became a huge star. You know?
And his name again, the actor who played the role as a soccer player?
Brandis.
Yeah, because he had that look, that guy's look. You know, he had his head down, shoulder.
Really good-looking young actor. He was in It, the original It, the TV movie. He was the lead character in that, the one who stuttered, whose little brother Georgie went down the sewer with the clown. Pennywise, scary movie. Jonathan was great. You know, we really miss him.
Let me ask you this now. As a club owner, we just got out of 2020. You know, congratulations for surviving, number one, right? I mean,
it was tough, man. It was like a blur. That whole year was like just a blur, you know? We reopened the Laugh Factory at the Tropicana in November, November 3rd, I think we opened, or 4th. And we're still only going Thursday through Sunday. But in June, we're opening full week. We're going to be Monday through Sunday again.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's being very careful in Vegas, right? I mean, everybody's following the rules.
But Vegas is on a big upswing right now. Everyone's coming to town. Now that it's pool weather, the summer, I think, will be really big. So we're waiting until after Memorial, you know, well, actually Memorial Day is when we open on Monday. And it's our 9-year anniversary. We have Vicky Barbalak from
AGT.
AGT is our headliner that week.
Oh, wow.
What's she called? Trailer Sexy? What's her?
Trailer Nasty.
Trailer Nasty. That's right.
Well, awesome.
That's about shows like AGT. When you think that Vicky's been around a while, Greg Wharton's been around a while, Greg is like 61, 62, and to have something happen to you, you know, in your career, whether it's being on national television like AGT or Vic DiBattista making those videos that went viral and selling out, you know, on the East Coast and in Florida, it's great that you could see somebody in their 50s or 60s can still make it. And that's what happened with Rodney. Rodney was like, you know, in his early 60s. When he got back in show business and came up with No Respect and Nothing Goes Right, and all of a sudden became a huge star on the Ed Sullivan Show and the Tonight Show and all those talk shows. Back then, you had Merv Griffin, Mike Douglas, Dinah Shore, Steve Allen. There were so many network shows that you could be on and get great exposure.
Yeah, I remember that, Merv Griffin and Mike Douglas.
I'm just laughing. I'm thinking about just in recent months because Eric Myers was this was going to be his year to be on America's Got Talent. And we were working with Piven back in February when America's Got Talent is asking for all of these clips from Eric, but we have to do these TV clean. So we're just trying to get clips of Eric doing his set clean at the Improv, just enough to send over to America's Got Talent. And it's just so disappointing because this was going to be his year, certainly. And I think America's Got Talent was just the thing he needed on top of, you know, him meeting himself halfway to making it happen. But yeah, it takes an enormous amount of effort to get the right clips for America's Got Talent. But I do. I think it really does a lot for comedians to get them up
and yeah, the good thing, the wall. And the good thing is you have to be working and being active. You know, sometimes, and it has nothing to do with Eric. This guy was incredibly talented. And, you know, luck is not the question. It's the unluckiness of the guy's life. But, you know, you if you have the talent, you're doing it all the time. People will sometimes say, oh, that person got lucky that they got seen. I actually, somebody didn't know what they're talking about, said Preacher got lucky. And they got Derek's got talent. I'm like, lucky. The kid's a bomb full of energy and talent, you know. And just keeping active. And I think that's the message you mentioned with Rodney, and just keeping at it. You know, just keep going. The thing is, if we love what we do and we're doing it for that reason, we're not wondering why and how. We're just doing it, right?
Yeah. I mean, when Rodney passed away, he had some surgery that he needed to get. And you know, it's very risky getting type of surgery that he had at 82 years old. And he could have just not gotten it and been, a ticking time bomb to have a heart attack or something like that. But he wanted to keep working. He was like that. The night that I saw him in the hospital before the surgery, he was like, man, do you think if I just, you know, did a half an hour, people would come see me if I had you open for me and another act open for me? Like he was still, and he didn't need the money, but he just loved to perform. You know, he needed that fix, and he wanted to live so he could keep doing stand up or make another movie. He wanted to write a Charlie Chan movie. He wanted to play Charlie Chump, like the cousin of Charlie Chan. He goes, man, I could do all my one-liners, you know, Confucius say, and have the fucking eyes. Couldn't believe he wanted to do a Charlie Chan movie, you know?
As you're saying it, I'm picturing it, and you can imagine how funny that. Now, obviously,
it would be so politically incorrect today. You couldn't do that, you know. He would have the big man. I'll wear these big glasses. I'll magnify my eyes.
how about that? Now, I mean, I was watching some clips about Nick. I'm having a brain. I'm actually having a moment.
Is that a senior moment? Is that what you were talking about? You left out senior. That's a senior moment.
I'm forgetting everything. Who am I? but the difference in today, you know, there's jokes, you know, you can't tell. I mean,
there's a great movie called Breakfast at Tiffany's, you know, and Mickey Rooney plays Audrey Hepburn's upstairs neighbor, and he's playing a Chinese man with buck teeth and big glasses and doing the most absurd racist accent. And this is like a movie that was nominated for Academy Award, and you can't do that today. That's just horrible, you know?
Yeah.
It's just so stereotyped. It's terrible.
I'm just amazed, though, at the people who are contributing to this. Like, I watch, sometimes I'll catch The View because it comes on after whatever I watched before it. Mm-hmm. And I hear Whoopi Goldberg, you know, blowing up this whole racist thing. And I'm like, wait a minute. You wrote and scripted a black-faced act for your husband, Ted Danson, at the Friars Club for her roast. But yeah, you don't hear that doesn't come up.
They weren't married. They were just dating. So don't.
They were expected to be lifetime. You're right. They were supposed to.
That's a different. That's a different situation. The Friars Club back then, and that particular instance was closed behind closed doors. And that, I mean, if you watch the Friars roast today, they say the most vile stuff and they're going for shock value. But that's what the Friars Club was all about. Look, it's just wild when you see something, you go, oh, you can't get away with that today. Even the movie Ladybugs, I look at some of the jokes that we did in that and I go, holy shit, we can't get away with that. You know, not saying that you should not air some of this stuff. I mean, you know, the whole woke community was getting all up in arms about Mammy in Gone with the Wind, the character, and that they should put a disclaimer before. And I think we realized, you know, this is a movie that was made in 1939, that, things are a little bit different the way something would be handled today.
That's what's interesting to me. You know, but it basically was somehow, wasn't it depicting? Wasn't Gone with the Wind a depiction of what was going on at that time?
Yes, of the Civil War and of all those particular characters. Scarlett Johansson. Scarlett.
She was hot. She aged well, that lady.
Equally as hot, yes.
Being a Southern belle, you know, the depiction of that in a 1939 novel and screenplay, and then slaves in what they could do or what Hollywood perceived, you know, just the way Hollywood perceived American Indians in a John Ford Western, you know, back then, and Chuck Connors playing Geronimo. You know, we're looking for more realism today. You know?
I mean, I was a big Bruce Lee fan, so the story about Kung Fu. I'm a big Bruce Lee fan, so the depictions of, you know, what he went through with Kung Fu with James Carradine getting the part.
It was originally supposed to be his, and he helped develop the project. And, Hollywood wasn't ready for an Asian television star. You know?
Well, going back to the Indians, though, they those tribes did very well in Monument Valley. They made a lot. All of those Westerns were filmed in Monument Valley, and they were paid very well to film on that land. So there's an upside. I don't know how you want to look at that.
Well, I don't think they got the money back then to shoot on that land. You know, I mean, today, I don't want to get into this whole thing, but obviously, if you have the heritage, and you're going to get a piece of a casino that's on the property, that could be pretty lucrative. But, I don't know what was really going on back then in Hollywood. But,
I'd be curious to know.
I don't think of.
Do you know the number, Jen? Do you know?
I actually do have friends in Monument Valley from when we went on our tour. We did do the tour. And I can find out the answer. I am curious to know. I will find out the answer to that question.
Right. Let me change gears here. One of the things I found out when I was in Vegas and I got to hang out in that unbelievable green room, chocolate, drinks. It's just, and I missed when you guys had karaoke.
You mean?
Huh?
You said chocolate drinks?
No, chocolate and all candies and then drinks, of course, you know.
You're talking about just the snacks.
Yeah.
Doug's talking about snacks now.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have a lot of snacks in the green.
Potato chips. There's, you know, I'm thinking of chocolate. I mean, look at me. Chocolate comes to mind. Reese's, Snickers. We're not talking about just, you know, Twix. We're talking about a good array.
We go all out.
Great stuff. Now, one of the things I found out is that you're a bit of a cook. You like to cook.
I'm Greek, and I love to cook. And sometimes I didn't cook your week, but I'll cook sometimes when there's like comedians there that are my friends that I really want to kind of go hang out with, and I'll bring down, you know, a platter of ziti. Not to say that I didn't want to cook for you, but
sounds like that's what she said.
Maybe just a little bit. I was a little
not. Maybe not in those words, but it's like not you, but like people like you.
Yeah. But some weeks I'll you know what it is, because we're not socializing the way we were before. We would do karaoke on Fridays and Saturday nights, and the comics would come from the other clubs and stuff like that.
It's great. But what would you say? As a chef or as a cook, is a preparation, what's your favorite part of cooking?
It all depends on what I'm making. Like, when I've had the comedian Basil, there, or Angelo Sarakis, who are both Greek, I will cook like moussaka and, homemade hummus and stuff like that. Dal Myrera, I'll do sausage and peppers, baked ziti. Sometimes I'll just make homemade mac and cheese and chili. You know, the comics really seem to like that. What's the name of your tech guy again?
Christopher.
Oh, okay. Just in case people want to see what he looks like.
Mark Zuckerberg.
Because he looks like Mark Zuckerberg.
A little bit like Mark Zuckerberg, doesn't he?
No, you can tell people you were on the podcast with Mark Zuckerberg.
And just like stuff in his face the whole time.
I know.
It's one of those To Catch a Predator guys. You know?
Please send all your hate mail from Facebook to my producer, Chris. Yeah, that's awesome. What's your besides cooking, what's your favorite dish to eat?
Well, I'm on this keto diet right now, so I really miss bread and pizza. And last night we were watching the movie Chocolat, and I was just looking at the chocolate and going, oh my God, I miss all that. But I haven't had any sugar or carbs since February 21st. That's when I started my diet.
So wow.
But this is the thing. I'm at my normal overweight. So during COVID, I guess I gained 20 more pounds and I'm at my normal overweight. But this is, seems to be working. I'm doing the intermittent fasting and keto at the same time.
Oh, so it's coming off fast. You started in February and you think you lost about 20 pounds,
you know, and then I kind of plateaued. So I'm trying, and my wife is like, oh, you got to switch it up now and try Mediterranean or something like that. And I just, the fact that I don't want to have sugar, I just want to kind of stick with it and see if I can get a lower, you know.
The sugar thing is key from what I'm understanding. I just started taking vitamin D again because I'm as withering as a Snuggie.
Well, you go into this, they call it the keto flu. Like I don't know if you ever tried to quit caffeine, cold turkey. You get really nauseous and headaches and stuff. And I got really sick the first 3 days trying to do this diet. And I guess because my body was just, you know, no carbs. Hmm. I was like, oh, I don't know if I can handle this. It's gross. But, you know, now I'm okay.
Yeah, the sugar too. The sugar is like you detox. You actually detox off the sugar. It's so bad. But now is your wife doing this with you? Is she also keto and intermittent?
She doesn't need to. But
will she eat what you eat? I mean, like, do you cook and then you guys eat whatever?
Last night we had salad, a nice big salad with chicken breast in it. And, you know, there was no bread, no carbs or anything like that. You know, egg, chicken, protein, cheese, veggies. So, you know, that kind of a thing. Or tonight I might make cauliflower, steak and chicken. So two proteins. But you know, breakfast was so easy to have a piece of toast or something like that. And I kind of miss that.
Yeah.
Like a bagel.
Yeah. I'm not a big breakfast guy. I'm normally fast, but I don't know if I had to stop doing the coffee, I think that would be an issue. By the way, another movie you were in was Peggy Sue Got Married, which our good friend and my good friend Will Schreiner was in.
Yeah, Will and I and Jim Carrey and got to work on that movie up in Santa Rosa. I think we were there for about a month and a half. And Francis Ford Coppola directed it, which was pretty cool because The Godfather 1 and 2 are like my favorite. Actually, it's a poster to The Godfather I have right here. And it's autographed by Albert S. Ruddy, who won the Oscar for producing the film. And then I got to work with Al Ruddy because he produced Ladybugs. So I got to join the Writers Guild from Ladybugs, and Al Ruddy was the producer on that film, which was pretty cool. But we had a lot of fun making that movie. We were Nicolas Cage's group and his buddies. And, you know, we shot that up in Santa Rosa. Got to go up to Coppola's house to the winery and hang out at the winery at a couple of parties. It was neat. Kathleen Turner was in it. Catherine Hicks, who was in Child's Play, Chucky, you know, the original Chucky, she played the mom. She was also in the Star Trek movie with the whales. I forgot which one that was.
A good one, I think.
Joan Allen was in the film. Great actress. Been in a ton of movies. Helen Hunt was one of her first films. It was really cool to be in it. And they aired a lot on, you know, cable. And I think I just got a check for $60 for that the other day, you know, so I can go out to dinner with that residual check.
You know, you share these stories, and I have to ask you a question because, you know, I am a licensed fiduciary. I manage money for a living and I put value on things. And I'm wondering if you can actually put a numeric value on the experiences and the camaraderie you've had with so many of these great people and funny, talented folks that, you know, Jen and I can only imagine and know.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, anybody who's been in the business a while has fun, you know, fun stories. I mean, there's a ton of New York comics who go, oh my God, I used to work with Ray Romano all the time. Almost every New York comic can do an impression of Ray Romano and work with him at the clubs or at the Comedy Cellar in New York. And I don't know if you ever played a club called Rascals in New Jersey, West Orange, but back in the 80s and 90s, you know, you worked with a ton of comedians like that wound up surpassing you and are huge stars today, you know. Yeah. I think I worked with Rosie O'Donnell. I don't really know her. I'm a big fan. I think she's really talented, a great actress, and her talk shows were wonderful. And she's a great activist. But I guess I worked with her there. You know, she was a feature on the show. And, you know, it's amazing just the people that you work with in the clubs that wind up becoming huge superstars.
You know, a lot of comics talk about Pips. You know,
yeah, I never played there. I started at the Comedy Store out in Hollywood. So I came out in 82 and wanted to be an actor and never thought about doing stand up. And one night I was looking for something to do because I had a friend visiting, and I was a waiter at the Sheraton Universal. And one of the waitresses said, oh, go to the Comedy Store on Monday night. It's free to get in because the amateurs go on first. And then you get to see the professionals go up afterwards, and it's free. You only have to get a 2-drink minimum. So I went and I saw the amateurs, and then I would see guys like Louis Anderson and Andrew Dice Clay and Argus Hamilton and Blake Clark and all these professional guys go on afterwards. And after seeing the amateurs, what they were trying to do, and then seeing the paid guys, the professionals, up and coming professionals, I was like, shoot, I could do something like this. And Mitzi used to book a lot of variety acts. So there were guys that used tapes and music and did impressions and used props. So I came up with a bit. And then 2 weeks later, I went and auditioned and I became a paid regular. So here I am now, a comic. And I would, you know, watch the pros and get inspired, not to like take an idea, but just to realize, okay, you need a gimmick or you need a hook, you know, and I had like this gimmick act and was able to get a lot out of it, you know. It just kind of plateaued though, as far as becoming famous with an act like that. You really can't, because you got to pay royalties for the music that I was using. Mm-hmm. Right. So but it opened up a lot of doors. It introduced me to Rodney and introduced me to a lot of other people. And, you know, you always try to reinvent yourself. Like now I'm in the phase of owning clubs and running clubs. So that's been fun. And I get to work with a lot of my buddies and book a lot of my friends. And even though I'm not performing as much.
But it's a nice transition to stay in something.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. Yeah. You know? It's a great brand. I'm so proud to be part of the Laugh Factory family.
Absolutely. Great club. And yeah. You know, I feel that as a comic, I book shows, you know, and stuff like that. So it's helped me develop a lot of relationships, a lot of like Jen book shows as well. So it's helped, you know, we get to meet a lot of funny people that are, you know, doing their thing and you're making it and all different levels of comedy. And you get to experience that, you know, you get to see what they're dealing with. And there, so we kind of, I don't know, as for myself, I take that all in and try to, you know, sponge as much of the information as possible to help me on my journey. So just like in meeting you and the opportunity to actually perform at the Laugh Factory, which is awesome. Great. The staff, unbelievable. You know, everybody there is just a class act, you know. Yeah, you are. And sometimes you go to a club and you're like, is there a green room? No, there's a closet if you can fit.
Well, we try to, you know, you look at like some of the best clubs that you've played over the years and some of the best formats and stuff like that. And, you know, there's a lot of what I saw the Comedy Store had in the 80s at the Dunes Hotel. You know, we were in the main showroom and it was 5 comics on the show and you were pretty much working with other headliners. It was the only club gig I ever did where every comic on the show was a headliner. Like I would do a show and it could be Louis Anderson, Blake Clark, you know, from 51st Dates, Roseanne Barr, and Damon Wayans, you know what I mean, on the same show, you know, the 5 of us. And everyone was a headliner. It was pretty cool. Today, you know, you go, oh, I was in this club. Oh, who did you work with? Jeez, I forgot who I worked with last week. You know, you just don't remember. But that was great because we were all part of the the Comedy Store family. And we hung out, went out after the show together, went out to the pool during the daytime. We did a lot of things together. It was fun.
That's the camaraderie that, you know, and that's the thing now that once you're in, like you said, it, like Rodney felt that when he was, you know, he wanted to perform again, you know, he'd do anything. And like, when I don't perform for a few days, I start getting that, you know, like, oh, you know, I just need to do it.
Rodney used to always go up at the Comedy Store or the Laugh Factory in Hollywood or the Improv for years, you know, just to be sharp and then to work on his Tonight Show set. You know, if he had a new Tonight Show set coming up, he would write the jokes and then go and try them out. So it was pretty cool seeing a big superstar like him just working out. You didn't really see a lot of the other old school guys do that. You know, they would just go on and wing it. But Rodney was such a professional and so polished.
Definitely very appreciative. I have to ask this because I can't tell you how many, I wish I had a nickel for every time I met someone who told me they wrote a joke for Rodney.
He would buy jokes. And years later, you know, when he had his website and there was blogging, I mean, I think Rodney would have really loved social media now and the immediate connection with fans and shooting videos and stuff like that. He would have loved all of that. But I remember he was like, somebody sent him a joke. I remember the joke too. It was a real dirty joke. You know how Rodney had his Dr. Vinny Boombatz? You know my Dr. Vinny Boombatz, right? Are you kidding? What a doctor. He told me to stick my own finger up my ass, right? So it's a dirty joke. It's not a great joke. Rodney loved it. The guy who sent it to him, he paid for that guy and his wife to fly to Vegas, put them up at the MGM, got their food comped, and introduced the guy in the audience. Like, who does that? You know what I mean? Yeah. You know, the trip must have cost a couple of $1,000, you know, but back in the day, he would buy a joke, you know, like that. Right. He bought some jokes from Jackie Martling, and there were a few other comics that would send him a bunch of jokes. And, or there were some guys who maybe opened for him that wrote a joke, and, you know, it's pretty cool. But he basically wrote you know, or he would take that joke and rework it and make it a Dangerfield, you know, polished joke.
Yeah. I've asked some people to buy their jokes, you know, cause it's like, it fit something for me. I'd say, I'll give you money. And I was pretty, you know, again, I was a little too, cause then you give a big number, like I'll hold out to get a better number. I'll write my own joke. You know, you got to get going and you got things to do. You're a busy man.
Yeah,
so
nice to be on, Jen. Pleasure meeting you.
Nice to meet you. See you soon.
The tech guy, the producer. Nice meeting you. It was fun chatting with you again. Dougie, it's fun to talk shop.
Thank you very much. And the last thing I would ask of you is any simple, clear advice you'd give to any comedian who's out there right now and would any good words of advice you would give?
Get a good, you know, 10 minutes, you know, 5 to 10 minute tape on yourself. It's funny, we all say tape, but there is no tape anymore. But, you know, if you're playing in a room, have a good straight set. Don't cut it up. There's a lot of comedians today will send me videos of them doing one joke at an improv, another joke at the Comedy Store, another joke at the Laugh Factory. And usually they're on bringer shows. And I don't want to see a compilation of you doing a set somewhere unless it's like, oh, here you are doing about, you know, 5 jokes on Conan, 5 jokes on Fallon, and then your own Netflix special. Cause then I go, oh wow, this guy's got a lot of TV credits. Just seeing you at a different club. We want to see a straight through unmanipulated set and not from somebody's cell phone, you know what I mean? Behind a seat, a professional shot, whether the club has preset cameras, something along the lines of that. Just have a good tape on yourself. All of a sudden today, years ago, you would have to send in a cassette tape, you know, a VHS tape or a DVD, a headshot, a bio, any press material. Now you can just send an email to someone. They can see you and in a second respond and go, yeah, I'll use you this week. You know, it's pretty cool.
There's still some old timers that ask for a disc.
Yeah, I know. I send you a tape. I'm going to tape. Yeah, it's hysterical. But we still say that.
I got to go to like a garage sale to produce something. Well, again, thank you so much, Harry, for being on the show, and God bless you and your family, and for giving a stage for us in one of the greatest cities in the country.
A great one.
Thank you, guys. And yeah, Chris, and and then, Jen, we'll do, I didn't discuss this with you, but we'll just start recording at a point and in between a break, kind of like a break.
What?
All right, we're just going to, he's going to cut away and edit when we broadcast this. So we're just going to, coming back like we just let him go.
Okay.
Just say goodbye. Well, and for time purposes, what we'll do is we'll go through some of these. Are you right on time, Jen?
Yeah, I'm good. I'm hungry.
Yeah, my wife fed me before this, so you can't tell.
I had to go work on the lighting over at the farmer's table. When are you moving?
We close on May 20th in this house.
That's so what I thought.
I'm leaving the 22nd or 23rd. I'm driving up. We're moving all our stuff in. And then I'm going to be back in July.
Oh, okay. I haven't decided if I'm doing a show in July. I'm going to see what the turnout is for June. And if we have a decent turnout, I'll do a show in July. I'll let you know. You can do it.
Ooh. And I got my Isla Mirada gig going. So if you can, if you wouldn't mind driving out there and back. What's up, Chris? All right, ready to go?
Let me pull
up the doc.
Yep.
All right. I'll give it like a 5 second quiet count. Then.
Oh, yes. That was a great article.
Sorry. And that was great to have Harry on the show.
It was. It was very interesting. I enjoyed just kind of listening to him talk, and I thought his advice at the end.
Yes.
He had me all ears.
Yeah, a lot of people don't realize that. You need a, if you want to get into any club or any festival, you got to have at least a good 7 to 10 minute video. And, you know, it can't be, because I've actually been to festivals where they shared videos, really bad ones, during like some of the seminars.
Yeah.
And they'll show like somebody's girlfriend's holding it, like, he's funny, isn't he? He's so funny. And the thing's shaking.
No, that's no good. But I have a weird superstition. So after I have a good, like, let's say, you know how we're always tweaking our energy and our set and tweaking things. And then I'll get to a point where I'm like consistent show after show. I'm like, I've got it. I got to get this shit on tape. And it's like the minute I tape it, yeah, or try to tape it, it's like not the same, or the crowd doesn't react. It just happened to me. I feel like I've been on a little bit of a roll. Things have been good. I'm like, let me get this on tape. I did turned up the energy a little bit. Not even, it sucked. I didn't bomb, but it wasn't what I wanted.
It wasn't the video quality. First of all, I'll say this. This past weekend, I've got two great videos I'm going to have shot at Stir Crazy Comedy Club, because I reached the semifinals of the Cactus Comedy Classic in Phoenix at Stir Crazy Comedy Club.
Mazel Tov. Is that part of Joe's World Series or no?
No, that is a different club for the Driftwood. I forgot comedy. Great people put on Driftwood Comedy. I forgot the name now. I'm so tired. It's been a long day. I've been traveling. Anyway, but great festival. And the first set, 5 minutes crushed. Just had the crowd was there lit. Great stage. It's going to be professionally shot. And the semifinal round, I ended up going first, pretty much to the contestants, but I still had a great set and everything. So going to have, but you have to have a good set, because, you know, like you said, if somebody says, hey, I want to book you, send me a video, you know, you got to have something that's good quality. And even little things like don't even send a booker a video that has the intro. And now everybody coming from some, edit that shit out.
Right, right.
Start it right from the beginning of your joke. Yeah, right from the beginning. And then like Harry said, don't edit it. Just get the best 5, 7, 8 minutes you can find in a clip and put it together. Hey, by the way, it's time for the news is a joke.
And I'm so excited for this today. Yeah.
Now we have, it's funny because we have really, you know, I used to have to go. The weird thing is I used to have to go to these sites that had odd news.
Right. Now you could just go to regular, you can go to Yahoo.
Yeah, I go to Yahoo. I go to Google. I go to NBC News. by the way, cheers to Caitlyn Jenner, who actually spoke her mind and stated her opinion on a subject matter. You know, people don't want racism, but people don't want bigotry, and people don't want misogyny and all this kind of stuff and homophobia. But the only way that you can have something like that is when you ask somebody to not feel the way they feel. Now, you know, like if I want to respect the rights, obviously, of someone who's gay, that's their choice. That's their life. I'm not gonna say choice, but that's their life and stuff. I'm not going to put my value system onto theirs. So that's part of being all part of the group. So, so, you know, God bless her for speaking out and saying something, whether I agree with it or not, but she went against the grain.
And said, that's not fair.
Yeah, I guess she's used to that. A man was hospitalized after a porta potty he was using at the historic Gettysburg battlefield was crushed by a tree.
I love this story. Was he okay? He survived. He went to the hospital, but he's okay.
I'm not saying anything, but there was a Black Lives Matter flag. I mean, it's, you know, I thought that'd be fun.
I find that very hard to believe because I'm a huge Civil War history buff to the point where we go to a lot of these battle sites, both Union and Confederate. I've been in Tennessee. I've been to Gettysburg. And I do notice, and I find it really strange, and very rarely do I see Black people at these museums. Like, we were just in Gettysburg a couple months ago, and that's when I noticed again. I'm like, you might see one, but I'm like, why, when in such a relevant time, I can understand not going to Stone Mountain, Georgia. I get it. Okay, you don't want to go to Stone Mountain, right, you know, and see the rebel flags, but Gettysburg, how come there are no Black people visiting Gettysburg? So when you say there's a Black Lives Matter flag, I find that very hard to believe because there weren't a whole lot of Black people there for some reason.
Yeah, well, it's just a joke, you know, considering that a Black Lives Matter would have chopped a tree down to crush a Confederate soldier taking a dump in a porta potty. No worse place to be than a crushed porta potty.
Oh, really? I'm sorry. I missed the joke.
Listen, you did. That's okay. You got a 10-minute video? A tree fell in high winds and crushed a porta potty at the Gettysburg battlefield site in Little Round Top. Man was inside at the time. First responders cut him out, and he smelled like shit.
When I heard the story, I said, wow, that must have really scared the shit out of him.
Yeah. Or all over him.
Anytime,
yeah, we should do that. You know, people would be in a porta potty when you were a kid, and you'd go shake it and stuff. And
yeah, move it, knock it over.
Yeah.
It's like in every 80s movie.
Our next story, a mystery animal. And a tree turns out to be a croissant. Yeah, I'm mistaking a croissant from a beast from outer space. Then I put butter on it and ate the shit out of it. I love croissants.
Ah, oh, they are good.
Right? Flaky croissant. You can't eat it in bed. It's, you know, croissant's not something you'd eat in bed unless you got a dustpan.
Are they? See, now I don't find them to be really crummy. They should just open and be soft. I don't know, but hearing Harry talk about the keto diet just made me hungrier. I just can't think of anything I'd rather do less than keto and intermittent fasting. I'd rather put grease on my hips to squeeze through a door than have to do.
I'd rather see that. When animal rescuers in Poland showed up at the scene, they were able to nab the suspect bread-handed. A woman in Krakow, Poland. Go figure, it was in Poland. Had quite a fright when she saw what looked to be a bizarre animal that had been hanging on a lilac tree outside her home just a few days. Oddly enough, just after some guy got sick from eating a bad lunch.
And then went to Gettysburg. And
when officers showed up at the scene, they were able to nab the mystery animal, red-handed, because the animal questioned it turned out to be a croissant. And they grabbed some... they got some chili and dipped it.
I mean, how big was this croissant that she mistook it for an animal?
I mean, look, you know, and you know, sometimes when the wind blows, you know, you've been taking too much medication.
But even if it was an animal, I don't think something the size of a croissant would feel really threatening.
And the color, you know, I mean, it's brown. I mean,
yeah, but would you be threatened? But would you feel threatened by it?
She was a racist Polish woman. She was racist. She saw
she
a brown.
Was Poland.
She saw a brown object hanging from a tree. And she says, not here, not in Polinski.
Now, my mom one time was at a hotel and she saw something down by the pool. And she called the front desk and was like, there were these kids having a birthday party at the pool. And she called the front desk to complain about a monkey that just ran by. And the front desk was like, a monkey? Like, are you? And then my mom could literally see the hotel people come down, check it out. And it was a cat.
Oh. Yeah, I saw a news story. It was one when I was looking at the news stories. A person, it might have been in New Zealand or something, said they saw a baby dinosaur scampering through a camera going by the side of the house. Like, that's a fox, you idiot.
Baby dinosaur.
Stop smoking the pipe. Man arrested at Kid Rock's bar for removing colonoscopy bag and swinging it around.
And what are the charges?
Spreading the shit. That guy was a real party pooper.
That's so bad.
According to the news on Twitter, a call came over the Metro Nashville police radio last night for assistance at Kid Rock's big ass honky tonk rock and roll steakhouse. Longest business card you've ever seen.
By appointment only.
Yeah. Fit that on your fucking email. It's worse than mine. Seems there was a man who was stirring up shit at the bar.
Literally.
And by that, I mean, he removed his colostomy bag and was flinging it around like he was David and Goliath. That'd be a bad situation.
That would be awful. If that thing came unhooked, could you imagine? And you were talking about centripetal, like circular. I mean, it would spray. It would shit spray the entire bar.
Can we look at this as a, let's say, an actuarial would when it came to actual damage? It's better than if it slung out, right? I disagree. Right. I disagree. I think it'd be much better because if he's swinging it around, shit is being propelled in a complete 360 radius and everybody is now...
It's getting diluted amongst everyone versus diluted. Just a solid...
There's no dilution. Shit is flying through the air and somebody's dancing, singing, fucking bada bang yang biggy diggy jiggy. Except, they're singing Kid Rock songs and, all of a sudden they get a flump of shit in their mouth. Meanwhile, if the thing flung and just hit some assholes, because you're in a Kid Rock bar, it's probably going to hit an asshole.
Yeah. And,
you know what I mean? The chance of it hitting
just one asshole.
But that one person gets shit all over him. You know what I mean? And then I think that would have been a better situation. Our next story. Man throws coin into plane engine for good luck.
Oh, my God. What kind of idiot?
Well, they always say, I don't want to add anything to that, but this happened in Asia, in Beijing. They say the Chinese are so smart. Oddly enough.
That's a generalization and could be considered an Asian hate statement.
There's nothing hateful about saying somebody's smart.
That's not out. When this whole Asian hate thing came out a few weeks ago, I'm like, what kind of stereotypes are there about Asians? That they're really smart and hardworking?
Yeah, how dare you?
But I don't know. I guess they're getting also beat up for bringing COVID for the kung flu.
The kung flu. In a bizarre incident, a man who was flying for the first time threw coins into the engine of the plane for good luck, forcing the airline to cancel the flight and piss off about 140 fucking people. Oddly enough, everybody on the flight wanted to give him some new advice. Hey, next time you're taking a train, it's good luck if you jump in front of it.
If you're looking for some luck, I have some ideas. Yeah. Stand here.
Yes. If you're looking for some luck, why don't you go to India for a few weeks? According to the details, the incident took place at an airport in Waiphong. A male passenger named Wong, well, that narrows it down, was scheduled to fly from Waiphong to Haikou in Baibu Gulf Airlines. I'd never fly that one.
To Haikou. Did he take a 575? Get it? 575.
Oh, God. Could you imagine being on a plane? And you, we got to get off the plane. Somebody threw 45 cents into the engine. Oh, shit.
Oh, he'll get some luck.
I was freaking out flying home from Phoenix. There, I was looking down at the engines. I always, for some reason, when I take Southwest Airlines, my airline, when I take them, usually I'm on the A-list, so I usually get somewhere within the first few rows, which ends up being the row with the engine. And I then remember that story of that woman who died when the engine blew up and it flew through her window.
Yeah.
And this would have been a good time to have an aisle seat. But I'm looking down at the engine as we're flying home. It's dark. I see this red like rim, like the engine's maybe in fire inside. And I'm seeing a casing open up. I'm like, oh, shit.
No way. What was it? Is that a normal thing?
That was probably on mushrooms.
probably wasn't even on a plane.
I probably was asleep and dreaming. McDonald's robber demands let's get this straight. McDonald's robber demands chicken nuggets.
Chicken nuggets.
Flo Hernandez has to accept breakfast food because it was still too early.
That's bullshit.
I thought McDonald's let you get whatever you want.
Well, I know that you can't get breakfast after a certain time, but you should be able to get the other menu. I mean, it's not like they have a huge breakfast menu. Hmm. Oh, they do actually. Pancakes. I don't know.
Yeah, flapjacks.
I mean, does it really slow them down to throw chicken nuggets in the fryer versus hash browns?
Yeah. Well, they wanted, I mean, the guy got something. He's robbing the place. You know what I mean?
Oh, right. That's true.
He's gonna give him a bad Yelp review. And, you know, fuck damn, I was robbing the place, man. And they gave me the wrong shit.
Right.
Really strict about what time of lunch starts. Man had been jailed for robbing McDonald's in England and making off. Oh, sorry. Oh, that's your own shit, mate. Wrong back.
Well, in today's society, the criminal is always right.
Yes. Innocent until proven guilty. And the police officer is cancel cultured and shot to death and,
right.
and put out on notice on Twitter by LeBron James.
That's right.
A man has been jailed for that in England. Unfortunately for him, not only did he get caught, but he also wasn't able to get his favorite meal, the chicken McNugget.
I wonder what his sauce choice would have been.
Hmm. What probably is a criminal like?
Sweet and sour. No, what do they have? Hot mustard.
If the McDonald's employee was smart, they would have said, you know what? Keep your bag of money you stole from us. I'm going to fry them up. I'm going to go ahead and fry up these. I'm going to fry up a fresh batch. How many you want? 10, 20? Hell, I'll make 50. I got to get a bag out of the back. Wait right here. What kind of sauce you want? I'll be right back. And he ain't getting nothing.
Or he should say, here you go. I'll meet you in an hour.
Yeah.
And I want half of the money.
That'll just give him the Uber, you know, Uber right. Eat. elderly couple uses military Morse code training to escape Tennessee assisted living facility.
I saw this.
They listened and listened until the beeps and boops finally made sense. And it was time to go. A husband and wife briefly escaped from a secure memory unit, but they forgot where they were going. At an assisted living facility in Lebanon. Not Lebanon. I don't think that place, but it's somewhere else. Tennessee. Nashville. Lebanon. Last month, by using military experience with Morse code to decipher and memorize the code of the electric door lock.
Oh, so they could hear the door lock and they used that. Wait, it was Morse code, though? Bah, bah. Well, you know, like, I thought about that with my alarm. Like, you could hear
you could probably the code is. Out. Yeah, it's like, you know, it's like Close Encounters. Doon, 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 doon.
I think that's the chime I just did.
It is. The couple who have dementia and Alzheimer's disease are not identified in the state records. They went missing from Elmcroft, Lebanon for 30 minutes on March 2nd before a stranger found them wandering around asking for pudding.
And applesauce.
And they wanted McNuggets. Our last story, you're a cat owner, right?
I am.
Kids Science Fair project answers the eternal question. Do cats really touch all the surfaces or do cats' butts really touch all the surfaces in your home?
I would say probably so.
You think?
Yeah.
Now, do you have a long-haired cat or a short-haired cat?
I have a hairless cat.
Are we talking about the cat again?
We're not talking about my personal cat, but
cat are we talking about?
We have a pet cat.
Between that and my wife doing yoga outside.
Right, in her underwear. Oh. I'm telling you, that's premeditated. You might get lucky tonight, Dougie. She's feeling sexy.
I really think I am.
When I feel sexy, I do. I do tend to like, I'll put on like my sexy moment is my Weird Science tank top. I have a wife beater. Remember Weird Science, and I don't put a bra on. And I just wear that around, and that's my signal. So if Stu sees me walking around in the wife beater with no bra on, he knows I'm ready. It's go time.
You got that outfit handy? Let's check it out. Yeah. I could use the help.
So I think that's like her mating. We're animals mating, and that's her mating call.
Yeah, I'm getting it. Kids Science Fair Project answers the eternal question, do cats' butts really touch all surfaces in your home? It says here that, like many others out there, most people assume that a cat's ass touches everything, but you'd be surprised that not to, okay, hold on a second. I had it set for that moment. Okay. Butthole will only touch, let's see. Caden, like many others, thought they would assume the surface. Then their butthole will also touch the said surface. And to test the hypothesis, he and his mom applied non-toxic lipstick to, in fact, his asshole.
Oh, so they could see where the lipstick ended up.
Yes. And, you know, meanwhile, the cat was loving it.
he was giving ass yeah. kisses all over the house.
There's a bunch of cats outside the door of the house now. We want to be part of this test. can we join the clinical group, please?
Could you imagine seeing little anal kisses all over? little sphincter kisses.
Yeah. Here's the news. Long and medium-haired cats' buttholes made no contact with soft or hard surfaces at all.
Wow.
Short-haired cats made no contact on hard surfaces, but we did see evidence of slight smears on soft bedding surfaces. And if you have short-haired cats, they may be lying on piles of laundry. So do the laundry. And unmade bed sheets.
My cat, his ass is all over the place. I mean, we were on the podcast tonight. You'll watch it. You'll see it. He walks right by. And is like, look at my butt. But I love him.
Let's see if he'll rub himself all over your Weird Science t-shirt.
Yeah. Hey.
That's all we have time for here on the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. I want to thank Jen Helmer for joining me today.
Good to see you, Dougie. I'm going to come visit you guys when you're in South Carolina.
Yes, we're weeks away from retreating out of this hurricane heat bowl of die people trying to avoid state taxes. And every comic in the world coming here for spots.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Here in Florida. So we're going to that. By the way, with that being said, and there's our producers on the show, Chris, he's on here. Next week, we have a show. Eric Schwartz and Paul Conyers are going to be on the show. Eric Schwartz, very funny guy, opens for Joe Coy. And Paul Conyers, who won the World Series of Comedy last year, funny comic, are going to be on the show. And that's it. We're going to take a couple weeks off while I'm moving and getting adjusted up there. So we're going to have a couple weeks, and I'll put some best sub out there for you guys. And other than that, don't forget to follow our show on Instagram, the Wake Up Late with Dougie show. Follow us on Twitter at Wake Up Dougie. Follow me at Dougie Dangerous on Instagram and at Funny Fiduciary on Twitter. Jen?
Yeah, I am not taking off. I'm very excited. I got Mike Vecchione in all week this week. So I'm working with Mike. And I couldn't do your show. And I was so bummed because I really want to work that room in Comedy Zone. But I'm going to work with Vecchione this week. And then you can see all the information on my Instagram, Jen Helmer Media, kind of encompasses it all. Yep.
Yeah, get that. I'm going to be at the Comedy Zone with Perry Sack at the Comedy Zone, Fort Walton Beach at the Block. Now Perry's going to know that he was not the first person asked.
Yes, that's why I mentioned it. I wanted Perry to know.
That's right. Well, Perry's ready. Perry's already given up his ass to me, so I already pounded him so many times. I'm not going to take him on the road.
He's like your cat.
Yeah, he's like my cat. His ass all over my bed. Anyway, Chris, back to you, sir. We're ready to close this thing out.
Thank you, Chris.
Guys, take care. We'll see you next week at the same time.
Bye. Wake up!